You are listening to the Wells Tech Podcast, where we talk about technology that can serve the church and its work of spreading the gospel. Wells Tech is a part of the Podcast Network on Streams, the internet media site sponsored by the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Join the conversation by visiting our podcast website at wellstech.wells.net. You're listening to the Wells Tech Podcast for Wednesday, December 8th, 2010. This is episode 161. You too can be a walking jukebox. Welcome back, everybody, to another edition of the Wells Tech Podcast. We're all the way up to episode 161. And by my side, through almost every one of those episodes, is my podcasting partner, Sally Draper. Good morning, Sally.
Good morning, Martin Spriggs. How are you this morning?
I'm doing well. I don't know if I mentioned this on the podcast, but I had knee surgery last week. So I was flat on my back for a few days. They pulled out what the doctor said was a peanut-sized M&M, you know, from a piece of cartilage from my knee, and they shaved off a little arthritis, and you know, just feeling the effects of many years of abuse, I suppose, on the tennis court and other sporting activities. So I guess that's the price we pay. But went well, so I'm glad to be back. Still a little bit medicated, so you're going to have to explain things sometimes if I'm not making any sense to our listeners, Sally. Which is maybe, whether medicated or not, that's probably the case. So,
should make for an interesting podcast. Yeah. Well, we wish you a speedy recovery and Lord's blessings that that knee is back to full force very soon. You can dominate on the tennis courts again.
Yep. Yeah, right. All righty. Well, we have a podcast to do today, and we are up to chapter 4 in the book.
The current book selection is Leading 21st Century Schools, and it's turned out to be a pretty good read for me, Martin, hopefully for you and for our listeners as well. We are into the Web 2.0 tools that can make your classroom tech savvy, and this week she gets into some content-specific tools and also looks at primary resources and peripheral devices as well. So lots to talk about this morning.
One of the book actually came up in a conversation yesterday I was having with Jeff Inniger and Greg Schmill of our Lutheran Schools office, and we were strategizing about a technology-based curriculum or standards, you know, standards that wrap themselves around this whole concept of technology in the classroom. And I brought this book up as a great example of really starting in the right place, which is the first two chapters we discussed, really focused on how to implement standards in the classroom that make sense as it relates to, the blending of technology and the educational process. And now we're to the point in the book where we've got that behind us, and now we're really focused on some very specific tools. And that's one thing I really like about this book, Sally, is that, you know, it's not just this theoretical, hypothetical thing. They use real-life examples from people who have contributed source material to the book and by subject matter, which is really where it's at, where, you know, technology in the classroom is nice to say, but you know, how does technology help me teach math, or how does it teach me teach science? And that's kind of where we're at with some of these tools. So,
and you got to know they're out there. That World Wide Web is a very big place, but finding good and trustworthy resources can be a challenge. And you know, you guys can listen to our podcast today, and you're going to hear about a bunch of them. But pick up the book, and you'll hear about exponentially more.
Right.
So, now, some great ideas there.
Gone are the days of where you just had just a couple tools out there, like the Oregon Trail and those kinds of things, where Mavis, you know, typing tutor, those kinds of things, which maybe there were just a handful of things that you would bring into the computer lab. Now we really need help in trying to figure out what works best, because the options are so many. So let's talk about a few of those.
Right. And right off the bat, she starts this chapter talking about primary resources. And by primary source documents, she's talking about a document or recording, a diary entry, a newspaper clipping that came from the actual events that you're studying, typically historical documents. And one link that was shared in this section of the book was from the Center for History and New Media, mm-hmm. and they have a whole page put together with links to all kinds of primary source resources, everything from World History Matters to Historical Thinking Matters to Teaching American History, Western Civilization, Exploring U.S. History, Women in History, Children and Youth in History, and on and on and on. You can get to primary source documents on all these different topics, and this is just a great launching page for anyone who's looking for those kind of resources. I know here in little old Sleepy Eye, we're real near to a fort that was integral in some of the Indian battles that occurred in this part of the country, and the historical documents that are there, where you can go and read the actual diaries of the people involved in the events, just really make a huge impact on our students, you know, to know that they're living the exact place and that they're reading the words directly from those who were involved in those Indian battles is just really impressive. So you can't underestimate the power of these historical documents.
When I was looking at that site, the one you just mentioned, there were a number of resources. There's a whole resource tab there that you can click on that will assist the teacher and the student in this whole concept of citing source material or finding source material, using it, citing it, and sharing it. And one thing that I ran across, which I can't speak from any personal experience, but looks very intriguing, is something called Zotero, a personal research assistant inside your browser, they call it. And they bill it as an easy-to-use tool to help you collect, organize, cite, and share your research sources. It lives right where you work and do your work in your web browser. So they have tools like one-click bibliography citations. So it sounds like it works right within the source material and helps you make quick work of citing the appropriate material in the appropriate format, almost in, I think they say, a drag-and-drop bibliography anywhere. So it's all kinds of these kinds of tools that I think we would probably be hard-pressed to come up with these by ourselves without somebody kind of putting these all together, which is kind of what the book does as well. So great
exactly.
site, great site.
Yeah. Thanks for that. And next up in the book, she shifts into talking about peripheral devices in the classroom. And of course, we've been using calculators and, you know, those mm-hmm. kind of things for years. But in today's day and age, you don't want to forget about interactive whiteboards and digital cameras, mm-hmm. not just still cameras, but now you can buy little flip cameras and
yeah.
have video in an instant that is shareable and easy to do. So, you know, that reminded me, Martin, that we did a whole show back in early January of this year where we invited, was it Pete and Carrie Schlosser?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it was a photography in the classroom focus, and they had some great tips to share. So if you're looking for more ideas for digital photography and video type usage in your classroom, you might want to dial back the Wells Tech archive and listen to that show.
Yeah, and that wasn't just about how to take pictures, but how to really incorporate the picture-taking process into almost every area of the curriculum, where, you know, they talked about having pictures taken of students, not just artwork, but all kinds of different things, or students in the act of doing different things, and, you know, kind of a video journal of mm-hmm. their work, and really interesting stuff. And I know they have given a couple of workshops at the State Teachers Conference, and it's probably worth a re-listen to that particular episode.
Yep. You don't want to underestimate those tools that you can make use of in the classroom.
Mm-hmm.
Once we got past that in this chapter, then that's when she shifted into content-specific resources. So she covers math, social studies, science, language art, and even more. And there are just a world of resources out there that you can use specifically for each content
yep.
area.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of interests for math, which is which is my favorite area, mm-hmm. was a website by Scholastic called Math Mavens, where they've put out some mysteries that can be solved with math. And they have them, you know, organized by difficulty level and also by the different skill sets that are involved, like whole number operations versus fractions and ratios versus geometry and spatial relationships. So you can find different challenging puzzles for your students from the Math Mavens website. She also shared links to a site done by the U.S. Mint where students can learn all about money. It's called the HIP Pocket Change website, and they teach all about the history of money, and there's games, there's kids' guides, there's a timeline, and the coin of the month as well. So mm-hmm. something for kids to enjoy and learn quite a bit about money from the U.S. Mint.
I was just looking at that Scholastic site that you referenced, teacher.scholastic.com, and they have a whole section, and I'm assuming that this is going to be more and more prevalent as we look through these educational resources, a whole section on interactive whiteboard activities. Mm-hmm. So it's not just how to, it's not just the content side, but it's the, they've developed tools, tips, activities that people can use on the smart board or Promethean board or Mimio or any of those, you know, kind of interactive learning devices now. And this site is really well laid out. So they've got a whole language arts section, social studies, science and math, all related to how you can use these on, you know, with these interactive whiteboards.
Mm-hmm. Good stuff. One more that's worth mentioning is the Illuminations website. And Illuminations is just a done by the National Council of Teachers of Mathematics, and it's specifically resources for teaching math. So they have activities, pre-K through 12 lesson plans, and it all relates to standards, and then they have a whole section of web links as well. Mm-hmm. So any math teacher out there is going to want to tap into the NCTM's Illuminations website for, yep. for ideas for their classroom. And yes, you can teach mathematics with technology for sure.
Mm-hmm. Oh, natural. Yeah, it's a natural. So
absolutely.
But I'm just amazed at the number of resources here. It would take you a while to go through all of these. So I think maybe the best advice is to pick a subject matter. You know, pick most of our teachers teach most of the subjects, but maybe if you're interested in just getting a start, pick a particular topic, a year maybe, and try to figure out what kind of tools, technology tools, to try and implement, as opposed to trying to take the whole thing, bite off a little bit, maybe more than you would want in 1 year. Pick a subject matter like math or like science, and just you know, play with a few of these tools over the summer, and then figure out, you know, where the sweet spot is for you.
The authors of the book always end each chapter with activities to consider, and one they say is to divide up among your staff.
Right.
Do exactly that, Martin. You know, so maybe one teacher is focused just on math resources and another on science or whatever, mm-hmm. and then begin to build your own you know, selection of favorite websites and become an expert just on one or two in a particular subject area and share it with your staff.
Yeah.
So a great way to tackle that.
Almost everybody we've talked to on this topic suggests that. I think Gail mentioned that in the show last week, where it's just a great idea to, it's really important, not just a great idea, but it's really important to share that and become a teacher of teachers so that not everybody has to reinvent the wheel.
Mm-hmm. A couple of worthy mentions in the social studies category. One of my favorites is National Geographic's Kids, mm-hmm. and it's just an incredible website. The kids are very engaged by the site. There's fun activities to do, online and offline activities that you can make use of, stories, games, you know, information about animals, information about different cultures and all kinds of stuff there on nationalgeographickids.com. Mm-hmm. So, and they have a companion site for little kids as well. I think you'll find a link there for National Geographic's little kids as well.
Right,
so
right.
Fun stuff for all elementary ages for sure.
Sure.
Another one I thought that kids would be excited about in the social studies category is an FBI, Federal Bureau of Investigation website for children where they can learn about the FBI. Now, I don't know about your kids, Martin, but my kids are real into Maxwell Smart and the whole Get Smart thing, and so they're spy wannabes, and going to the FBI site might be right up their alley and learn something along the way.
Yeah, they've done as straight-laced as someone might think the FBI is. They've done a nice job with their website for kids. Very easy to navigate. They kind of bring down what they do to a kid's level, and kind of a fun thing. They've got some nice imagery here, and I think it would be of interest to anybody who, especially kids, who would really want to understand a little bit about what this mysterious government agency does.
Yeah. Moving on to science, one that popped into my mind as I was reading this, she mentions that you can make use of webcams that are in various locations to actually get a bird's eye view of what's
like
going
live,
on.
Live webcams, that kind of thing?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And she included a link to the Davis webcam, which is at the Australian Antarctic Division, and you can actually look what's going on in Antarctic regions with the Davis webcam. She also included links to some live zoo webcams, like the San Diego Zoo's Panda Cam. And that reminded me that I had recently looked at the Atlanta Zoo's Panda Cam because they had a new baby panda born on November 3rd. Mm-hmm. And I went there this morning, and there was Mama playing with the baby panda live on the panda cam. So that would be a really interesting one to share with your students as well.
Yep. I can tell you that it is currently 3 below centigrade, that is, in the Antarctic region today. Although they show some previous images and some of the extremes of the coldest, and I have got to read the date here. It looks like August 31st. Remember, this is in the other hemisphere, so this would be midwinter, 39 below centigrade. So I think that's cold.
I think so. Yeah, we thought we had it bad in Sleepy Eye in Milwaukee.
What are you complaining about? Yeah.
Exactly. And I can tell you that Mama's laying down for a nap with her baby. Baby's not sleeping yet, though. She's wiggling around on the panda cam in Atlanta.
The panda cam,
so.
Yep.
Fun stuff. Another organization worth sharing is the NSDL, National Science Digital Library, and they have amazing resources organized by age level for K through 2. So you can go to elementary school, middle school, high school specific science and math resources on this website, and they even have professional development resources listed as well. So if you're looking for everything from chemistry to physics, engineering, earth science, life science, math, it's all here and organized very well. I'm sure you'll find links that would be of use to you in your science and math classrooms.
Very good. Lots of stuff. And we don't have time to go through all of the resources, but get the book or take a look at our show notes because we do highlight some of the things there. So as we're continuing with our monthly educational focus on this book, and the interview also follows that trend, we had a chance to interview one of our Wells teachers out in your neck of the woods, Sally, in Belle Plaine, Minnesota, Ryan Rachi.
Yeah, I'm excited to talk to Ryan and hear about all the technology they're using there at Trinity Lutheran School in Belle Plaine.
Mm-hmm. So let's listen to Ryan as he talks about some of the technology that he's been able to implement in the classroom. Exciting stuff. Joining us today on the Wells Tech Podcast, we're very happy to have Ryan Rachi of Trinity Lutheran in Belle Plaine, Minnesota. Good morning, Ryan.
Good morning.
Thank you very much for joining us. Appreciate you taking the time. Maybe just to get us started here, you could tell us a little bit, or tell our listeners a little bit about yourself, where you're serving, a little bit about your family, hobbies, that kind of stuff.
Well, I'm currently serving at Trinity here in Belle Plaine. This is my second year here. Before this, I was in Mankato, and previously before that, I was in Madison, and then in Washington State as well.
Okay.
I'm teaching 5th and 6th grade here, athletic director, and then in charge of technology as well.
Okay.
We love those techie guys.
Family?
Yeah, I'm married. I have 3 kids. Oldest is in 4th grade. I have a kindergartner and then a daughter who's 3 years old.
Mm-hmm. And your father recently started a new position out your way.
Yeah, he's the new tech guy at MLC, so we're happy to have him in the area after being in Michigan for his whole life. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very. I was had the pleasure of meeting him a couple months back. We do get a chance to chat, and we've got a couple of conference calls scheduled as well. So I'm looking forward to getting to know him and watching the technology plans grow there at the MLC campus as well. So one reason we wanted to talk to you is that you were doing some interesting things in the area of classroom technology. Now, you have responsibilities other than just teaching 5th and 6th grade there. You have technology responsibilities in general. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct.
And what does that involve?
Well, between me and the principal, he's a pretty techie guy himself, so we work together. But managing the computers on campus here and the infrastructure, and then how we're implementing them into the classroom teaching.
Mm-hmm. And we understand that you have done some recent research on netbooks and are beginning to use a mobile netbook lab. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about the thought process that went into that purchase and how you're planning to use it.
Yeah, well, as most schools know, computers are not cheap. And we often get the junk for Jesus, the hand-me-downs
right.
from other people, so you end up with computers that are older. And so with the big ticket items like computers, we were looking at different ways. And I think the way technology is advancing and the cheap price of netbooks makes an interesting idea for schools. They're a lot cheaper than a desktop, of course, and with more browser-based applications, it really makes sense for us to move that route. I think also with the infrastructure of our schools, we updated our wireless, so we were prepared for it a year ago, and then we added 13 netbooks this year,
mm-hmm.
and then we'll probably add some in the future.
Yeah. What kind of netbooks did you purchase, and what was the approximate price of those?
We went with a Lenovo netbook. I really liked it. It had a full-size keyboard, which was important to me because I want to move typing onto those, our typing program, so I didn't want a cramped keyboard, and it was about $300 a machine for those.
Mm-hmm. Not bad. And do those run Windows, or what's the operating system?
Windows 7 Starter is on them.
Okay. And your experience with them so far been pretty snappy, useful for the kids?
Yeah, the 7th and 8th grade are getting the most use out of them. Dan Whitney's using them with his class, and so when he's got things up on the whiteboard, the kids can follow along. You know, they're using them for writing and reflections and a variety of things. So, do you have a standard set of local apps, or do you use web apps, or what are the tools that you use predominantly on those machines? We do have the Office suite on them, so right now that's primarily what they're being used for: Word, Excel, PowerPoint.
Mm-hmm.
They're on the internet quite often doing research with them.
And then for file storage, do you have a network folder that they use, or do they use USB drives, or how do they save their work?
Right now, for simplicity, we're using USB flash drives.
Mm-hmm. So. And that seems to work all right.
Yep.
So as classes come in and out, they basically share these, or are they assigned one? I assume you have more than just the 13. It's not one per student.
In 7th and 8th grade, it is. It's a one-to-one.
Mm-hmm.
So they're stored in the 7th and 8th grade classroom, so they grab them, and they pretty much have their own that they're using. Every once in a while, they have to save stuff on the local hard drive, but we try to get it off as soon as possible.
Mm-hmm. And what size screen do you have on those?
I believe they're a 10-inch
wide
screen.
That's not too bad. And for the younger eyes of those kids, that's probably fine. I think me or Sally would probably struggle with a long-term use of the netbook.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. I'm sure they're enjoying them in the classroom. What about your teachers? Do you have any tools that is making life easier for the teachers at Trinity?
For instruction purposes, the interactive whiteboards, we have Promethean boards in our 5th and 6th grade, our 7th and 8th grade room, and we love them. Couldn't teach without them. Mm-hmm. So those are in there. We'll add some more into the lower grades as we go. But those are a great tool. Are you talking about instructional or administrative?
Yeah, and then
type?
Maybe for management, too. I understand you're using a particular gradebook program that's helping you.
Yeah, the gradebook is a big deal. There's a ton of gradebook programs out there, but the quality of them are pretty diverse. And gradebooks have kind of taken on a new meaning for teachers. They're not just for record keeping anymore. They're really used for communication tool for parents and for students, and also to give teachers feedback on, you know, data that you can gather from your students and your lessons. And so we had a bunch of needs, and we weren't particularly pleased with the one we had. So as I was evaluating, it took about a year and a half, and was evaluating more gradebook programs than I can remember. Mm-hmm. But there were some certain needs that we wanted. One, we wanted to have parent web access, and if it had auto email notifications, that's great. I was looking more toward a web-based report card rather than a local program, because that way it allows for easier instant access for the parents. Report card functionality, whether there was some customizable functions for that. The cost was also a big deal, of course. Grade calculations, is there different options other than just to find an average, because in some instances that isn't appropriate. And then I'm a big passion of mine is standard-based grading, so I want to know, did it allow for standard-based grading? And then did it allow for input of custom standards or objectives? And then does it allow a mix of traditional grading with a standard-based? So those were kind of my little list that I went down as I was evaluating these programs.
Mm-hmm. What was the name? What's the name of the tool?
The one that we're using is SnapGrades.
SnapGrades, okay. And does that have an online component? So are parents able to go online and view grades, or how does that work?
Yeah, it does. There's a parent web access, also students too, mm-hmm. which is separate from the parent. And it's great. It's got there's so many tools on it. It's amazing. It's got mobile access for people who want to access it from their phones too, also for the teacher end, which is great for people like me who has their laptop hooked up to the interactive board all day. You can't be showing your grade book on the front screen.
Right.
So being able to use like your iPhone or iPod Touch or an iPad to be able to access your grade book and enter things in is fantastic. So.
Mm-hmm. And is there a fee for that, Ryan?
It's a $50 year fee for SnapGrades, which was great for us. We cut, it was about a third of what we were paying. We were a power school user before that, so it's about a third of the price of what we were paying.
Very good.
$50 per student?
Per teacher.
Per teacher, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Great.
That sounds like a nice find.
Yeah. And you mentioned iPods. I'm going to pick up on that and understand that you are using iPods in the classroom for your students as well. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, the kids, of course, love them. We use them for a variety of different purposes, podcasting, put videos on them. Nice thing with that is I've had some students, you remember when we were in school, the teacher showed a video that day and you were sick. Guess what happened? You never saw the video.
Mm-hmm.
With these, it's great because I can load the video on that iPod, send it home with the student, and they still get to see what I wanted the class to see. So that's really nice. I use iTunes U. There's a lot of free stuff on there, especially through Lit2Go. There's a University of Southern Florida's got some great stuff for education on their iTunes U page.
Mm-hmm.
We have classical music and religious music on them, so we let the students use them for study time, which is great because when they got headphones on their ears, they're not talking.
Mm-hmm.
So classroom management tool also.
Right. I didn't think of that. Yeah, that's a great idea.
But the biggest one that I'm seeing some benefits from is use of audiobooks on them.
Mm-hmm.
We often read to our kids when they're young because, it's important. It teaches them language, a love for reading, but they like that even as they get older. And there's some interesting research on use of audiobooks as well. Gives the students to an opportunity to hear correct pronunciations and gives them great models of fluent and expressive reading, especially some of the narrators are, you know, famous, you know, actors or things like that where mm-hmm. they've got great voices and they do a nice job of reading these stories. Oftentimes the students read too fast and they skip over things, so it slows them down a little bit, lets the story sink in. And then with some students, they're all at different reading levels, so it allows some to read more challenging literature than maybe their reading level would allow, and it helps them along. Mm-hmm. So it's great. But the one thing I do insist when they're using them is that they have to be actively reading with the audiobook. I don't want it to become a passive activity.
Ah, right. So
they have to be following along as we go.
Mm-hmm. So do you have a certain number of these that you distribute on on an individual basis, or does each child have one, or how does that distribution work?
Right now, this is a pilot type of program in my classroom, so I have enough for every student in my class.
Mm-hmm.
So I've got a little box with them in there, and they put them in there when they're not using them. That way it gives me an opportunity at night and weekend to charge them up and put whatever music or info
sure.
or books on it that I want.
Do they bring their own headphones, or you have those as well?
We've got headphones here, too. I stay away from the earbuds.
Right.
Because of... you know, the gunk
hygiene, right?
Right. But we have earphones as well, so we've got it all here.
So, are those regular iPods or Nanos or iPod Touches, or what variety of iPods?
I went with the Nano, and part of that is because I didn't want to spend the money on the Touches yet, because mm-hmm. I wasn't sure that was the route we'd want to go in the future.
Sure.
I think the iPad's got a little bit more functionality for schools, maybe than the Touch. It's a little smaller. So we went with the Nano because we could get more of them for the price. So
they're going to be a little bit more durable, too. You don't have the large glass screen that could be a problem with a Touch, for instance.
And I wasn't sure I wanted to give them access to
apps
games
and
internet
right,
either,
right,
so.
Exactly. So.
So what's been the students' reaction, dare I ask? Are they excited?
Well, they love them, of course.
Yeah.
They're always asking to grab them, and they pretty much, they're out, and they can use them whenever they have time. Whenever they're studying, they can grab one and use it. So,
very good.
They asked to take them home too. So,
very good. Well, I know that we would be remiss if we failed to ask you about your computer usage, because I know that you are a Mac person, Ryan, and I like to give props to our Mac people when they're on the show, since we don't have a lot of that conversation going on the podcast. And so I wondered if there were any particular Mac recommendations that you might have for our listeners.
Yeah, I'm a Mac guy. I saw the light about 5 years ago and haven't looked back. So one of the big things that I like is the Safari web browser. They've got, just recently, they've added extensions. And for classroom use, YouTube is one of those things that you have to be careful with, because you never know what's going to show up on the sidebar. It's never, mm-hmm. you know, sometimes you'll be on there mm-hmm. and it'll be appropriate. Other times things will show up that aren't appropriate. So there's an extension on for Safari called Cleaner YouTube, where it takes everything off except the video. So no comments, no related videos, nothing. So it's fantastic. So that way when you have it up on the board, you're pretty clear as to what you're going to be seeing.
Mm-hmm.
No surprises.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a couple other ones that I use, extensions. One is AdBlock. I think that's on Google Chrome's browser.
Yep,
as well.
Firefox and Chrome both have that. Yep.
So it gets rid of all those flash ads, which is nice. And then one other one is called CussOff, which takes away any any words that we wouldn't want students to be seeing, too. It's great for a parent, too. So when I know my kids are on the computer,
uh-huh.
they're not going to be wandering somewhere and seeing something they shouldn't be. So
it would
replace things with asterisks.
So it would examine, let's say, comments on a blog or something like that, and yeah, or YouTube comments, those kinds of things. Great. Those sound like excellent tools. Good.
Yeah.
Ryan, thank you very much for taking the time. It sounds like you've taken some nice, at least introductory steps to really integrating very current technology into the classroom, and it sounds like your kids are responding as well. We'll look forward to maybe a conversation down the road once you have a little bit more of the netbooks in place and are finding uses for it. We're finding that a lot of classrooms are considering that, but there's obviously roadblocks, one of them being price, but another is, you know, how best to use this technology. And sounds like you have a roadmap to do that. And, you know, it's exciting to hear, you know, that that's working for you there in Belle Plaine.
Yeah, it's fun. It's fun for all of us, teachers and students.
Yeah, I bet. Good. And that's what it should be, you know, make educational experiences as enjoyable as possible. The kids are going to learn that way. So thanks again, Ryan. Stay warm as we head towards Christmas. Blessings on your Advent preparations. And again, thanks for taking the time today.
Yeah, thank you. Great talking with you.
Thanks again to Ryan for taking some time out of his busy day. He's got a lot of stuff going there.
Absolutely. I'm going to dig into that SnapGrade site right away. There are so many different grading programs out there, but it sounds like he went through a great extensive amount of research to identify one that really met his needs well. So I definitely want to take a look at that.
Yeah, both you and I commented during the interview that, boy, It would be fun to be in a classroom these days as a student, as opposed to the overhead projectors that we had and the film strips, you know, those kinds of things. Much different learning experience today.
Yeah, no more beeping to turn to the next film
strip. That's right. That's
real.
And everybody, you know, desperately trying to be that person that actually got to turn the film strip.
Oh, that was a thrill. Man, we're old.
I know. Let's move on to ministry resources.
Yeah, and we've made mention of this actually for the last several weeks, Martin, that the new international version 2011 went live in its digital format on the Bible Gateway website. I think actually YouVersion has it on their website now as well.
Yep.
It was kind of a surprise, actually, because it wasn't meant to go public until March of 2011, at least in print format. So the early release electronically kind of caught us all off guard, and we were all curious about what this new version included. It seems that one blogger has gone to the trouble to do a side-by-side comparison, and we want to include a link to that in our show notes this week. It's from the Don't Eat the Fruit blog, and he outlines every last change in the NIV 2011. Mm-hmm. He's got mind maps that show the words that were most common words that were taken out and the most common words that were added to the NIV. Kind of focuses a lot on removing the he's and his's,
right.
And they become anyone and more common they and their kind of pronouns and things. So interesting to see and hopefully a use to some of our listeners.
There's some interesting stats there too, because not only did he highlight some of the changes, but he offers some raw statistics about the number of changes by book even. So you can see how many total changes there were, or how many changes, let's say, there were in the book of Genesis versus Exodus. And it looks like, if I'm reading these stats right, the most the changes, the book that had the most changes looks to be Proverbs, which is kind of interesting. You know, of all the books. There's 2 Thessalonians is up there as well. So there must be some reasoning behind that, but interesting stuff. So, definitely take a look at that.
And along those lines, there was a recent Together newsletter article just kind of bringing everyone up to date with the Synod's position, I guess it would be, regarding the new version of the new international version. And it's basically that we have a committee, I think we talked about this before, that's been appointed to look at the new Bible translation and evaluate whether the new version is acceptable for use in our Synod. And the verdict's still out. Mm-hmm. They're working diligently to do that.
Yeah, this will be a long process, I'm sure, and there may not be definitive word per se, because I'm not sure that the Synod is in the business of approving a version, but it would be helpful to know what our theologians think of some of the changes that have been made. So just keep listening. We'll bring you updates, but I'm sure there'll be further updates in the Together newsletter as well. Shall we move on to news and tech?
We should, and I think you are in charge of that.
I'm in charge of news and tech. Okay.
Yes, sir.
Let's see. What did I reference this week? There was an addition to the portable credit card reader apps that we've talked about in the past. The one that I've used and I'm fairly impressed with, and I've mentioned this on the show, is something from Squared or Square Up. I think it's squareup.com. Mm-hmm. And now there's a couple of competitors coming on the market. One of them is RoamPay. It's like Square, except it's they've got a BlackBerry version. They also have Android and iOS and desktop versions as well. It's the same concept where they have a card reader. Actually, this particular card reader looks a little more sturdy than the Square one that came with Square Up. They've got a video there. So I can't comment on how well it works, but we're probably going to see many, many, many more of these coming down the pike. And as I mentioned, when I think I brought up Square Up before, there's certainly application for congregations and schools as they seek to receive payment via credit card in more of a on-location setting, whether that be in a concession stand or at the shop where you sell the sweatshirts or tuition or whatever it is. So lots of application here. RoamPay is the latest one on the scene.
And I guess the good news is if more are doing it, it will become more common and people will be more comfortable with the technology. So, if you are looking for this kind of solution, it's not going to be just this off-the-wall, strange little square device on your iPod. It's going to be more
accepted. It'll be more mainstream. Yeah, absolutely.
Exactly.
Yeah, and people, I think, will be comfortable with it. So,
yeah.
Moving on to picks of the week. Sally, I assume you have a pick as usual.
Well, I do, Martin, and this one maybe we've talked about in the past, but I'm going to point people to Pandora.com. Pandora is the internet radio where you can pretty much dial up whatever musical selections are your fancy. And I recently subscribed or created a new channel called the Christmas Canon Channel where I am listening to a lot of instrumental Christmas music. Imagine that. Mm-hmm. And what's different this year with my Christmas music listening is that I have figured out that I can do this on my iPod Touch. Mm-hmm. And my house is wireless, so no matter where I go within my house, then I'm able to stay connected to Pandora. So I crank up my iPod Touch, turn it onto the Christmas Canon channel, and tuck it in my pocket. And I am a walking jukebox. Who would have thought technology could bring me that far? But it has been a lot of fun. The family's enjoying listening to Christmas music. I've got it going all the time. And and I'm really in the spirit with all the beautiful music that's out there. This channel in particular, I have a lot of Trans-Siberian Orchestra music. Have you ever listened to them, Martin?
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Yeah,
enjoy
like
them
a
lot.
Queen kind of sound almost, rocking out the Christmas music a little bit, and I'm enjoying that. And I actually can share in the show notes my particular channel because I can get a link directly to that channel.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You can make them public, right?
Right. If you're interested in listening to my Christmas Canon channel and maybe becoming a walking jukebox yourself, then tune
in. I think
we
have a show title as well. So.
Oh, boy.
Pandora is great, and you can get it on many different devices. If you have a smartphone that has 3G enabled, you can actually hook this up to your car stereo and listen to Pandora right in the car through your car stereo. If you have a Roku box, you can listen to it via your TV setup. So all kinds of ways you can get at Pandora. And the price is right. Now, I think there are some limits. You can't listen forever. At some point, they'll say you've listened enough. I don't know if you've reached that point, but I know that there are some limits. But
You do have to create an account.
You do,
and it keeps track on your account. But I actually have an account for work and an account for
There you
for
go.
Home.
That's probably the best way to go.
You get double the pleasure. So.
Yep. My daughter, my youngest daughter, insists that I play my Taylor Swift channel whenever she's in the car. So. So that channel was specifically set up for her, or Keith Urban, one of those two. So you can tell what kind of people she follows. All right. I, too, have a pick, and this is for all you Firefox or Chrome. And now I just understood from the interview we had with Ryan Rachi Safari as well. And it is a plugin that Ryan referenced. And to be fair, I had this pick already picked out before he brought it up, so it was pure coincidence. Is a product or an extension called AdBlock. And AdBlock is a little extension or plugin that you can add to your browser that essentially blocks mostly flash-based ads. We all have seen those, and they can do a couple of things. First of all, just we understand that they're annoying, but secondly, they can actually slow the page load down. So if you're looking to speed up the page load of your browser, or just get rid of those distracting ads that pop up on certain web pages, AdBlock is real easy to install. It's free and actually works really, really well. It's one of the most popular extensions on Chrome. If you do a search for popular extensions, it's right up there near the top. Has great user ratings, so works really well. So anybody interested in kind of getting rid of those annoying ads that are popping up here and there, AdBlock is a way to go. And there's also something similar for Internet Explorer, and we'll put a link to that in the show notes as well.
So we've got all the browsers covered. We can get rid of advertising.
We do.
I like it.
I do too. And I don't know why it took me so long to figure this out, because I knew it was always out there. I just never got around to doing it. But it really has improved the experience for me.
All right. We are ready to move on then to our Wells Tech 2010 Christmas scavenger hunt.
Mm-hmm. Week four, clue four.
It's getting really exciting, Martin. We are hiding these QR codes, which you can read with your smartphone or you can decipher with an online decoder. And they're being hidden all throughout the archives of our Wells Tech show notes website. Mm-hmm. And this week we have clue number four. We'll wrap up our clues with next week's clue. And then one lucky participant who is able to solve our mystery will win a $25 gift certificate to Cafe Press, where they can purchase Wells Tech merchandise, anything from sweatshirts to hats to tote bags and clocks. We've got it all. I think we even have some flip cameras out there that you can get with Wells Tech stamp of approval on them.
Probably not for $25, but it will get you closer. Yes.
There you go. This week you got to sharpen your math skills, because there's a little math involved in our clues. So you'll want to bone up on those math skills if necessary. But the important thing is where to look for this clue. And I'm going to give you a little hint. We spoke earlier about photography in the classroom. And I think if you do some searching on that particular topic in the Wells Tech archives, you might find clue number four. So check it out, play along, and hopefully your Christmas dreams of Wells Tech cash will come true.
Yes. All righty, let's move on to community feedback. Who is talking to us, Sally?
Well, first up, Martin, I believe there was a link that you shared on Digo that seemed to be interesting that we wanted to talk about.
Yeah, this is an article called The Great Bible Shift. It's by Bobby Grinewald from Life Church TV. Life Church TV is one of these virtual churches. They have physical campuses, but they have an internet ministry, and they're doing very innovative things, putting their theology aside, but just talking about some of the things that they do to engage their parishioners. And this article really addresses some of the I think very important points about understanding what kind of congregation member we're dealing with these days, and the fact that they're getting higher tech and that they have mobile access, and what does that mean as we try and reach out to them, as we try and share God's word with them, and as they try and share God's word with others. Talks about things like the different Bible apps and how those are making a difference in people's Bible study habits, and talks a little bit about the future. And it's a very interesting article. So take a look at that. It's from a blog called CatalystSpace.com. So, and we'll put a link to it in the show notes.
It sounds interesting and worthy of our time to just kind of stop and evaluate.
We've got to figure this stuff out for sure.
Yep,
because it will have an effect.
For sure. And I also had a link to share using our Digo Wells Tech group. I shared a link to five innovative classroom management tools for teachers. Mm-hmm. And this is actually from the Mashable Tech blog. And there were five innovative tools that I'd never heard of. So I'm going to have to check all of these
out.
How
is that even possible?
I don't know, Martin. I think I'm slipping in my old age. But anyway, they have a digital grade book, something called School Circuit, which is worth checking out. Mm-hmm. They also have a way to collaborate on documents. It's called Backboard. And if you assign students to groups, then they can share a document, make notes and corrections as a group. And that can save time in the draft process as they're working through their document.
Mm-hmm.
There is an online quiz maker called Class Marker, and it is free, but you can buy a premium version and get rid of advertising and things. Looks pretty robust for making online quizzes.
Mm-hmm.
Lesson planning with Planbook EDU, and finally, taking attendance using your iPhone with a $5 iPhone app where you can snap their pictures to go along with it. And it even has a random student feature. If you're calling on kids in the classroom, you can randomize and come up with a student name. So
interesting. I like that.
Lots of fun tools to check out for our teachers and the listening audience.
I like that. I like it. Then we heard
next
from Marin McPeak. Easy for me to say on Twitter, right?
Right. Marin tweeted a question for our Wells Tech listeners, and I think it's a great question. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if we have addressed this before, but she's looking for acceptable use policies for K through 8 students for using network, Google Apps, and Moodle accounts.
Mm-hmm.
And just kind of looking at the ramifications around the use of those kind of tools. And there are listeners that have that kind of resource, we'd love to have you share it.
I've seen, and we have, I think, some examples of network usage, you know, acceptable people use policies, but nothing with some of these Web 2.0 tools like Google Apps or Moodle. So I think that would probably be useful for many people to be
Absolutely.
Able to have that in place. So good question.
And the last thing we have to share today is from listener David Schumann, who's at Peace in Janesville, Wisconsin. And David recently fielded a telephone call in his congregation where someone called, and it seemed to be representing their copier company vendor. And they were looking at sending out a new price list and updating their copier supplies through this person over the telephone. And as it turns out, David kind of sniffed out a scam, it seems, that mm-hmm. There's this whole industry called toner pirates, where these external people kind of pose as legitimate toner salesmen, even representing the copier companies that you have contracts with potentially, and may kind of steal your business away and at a very hefty price tag.
Mm-hmm.
And there's several articles and things to reference out on the web about this problem, and, you know, just kind of cautioning you to beware of this. So I think church offices maybe are a little bit susceptible to that kind of thing, especially
sure.
if there's not a lot of continuity with the staff or whatever with the vendors that
mm-hmm.
they deal with. You know, and so just be on your guard, especially for people contacting you. I know another area where people do this is trying to kind of steal your domain name registration for your website out from under you. And they'll say, oh, your registration is up and you must renew immediately. And it's not even from the company that you currently have your registration listed with. So
mm-hmm.
similar kind of scams for domain names. So just, again, be on your guard. You can always check with your Better Business Bureau and, you know, check internally within your office to make sure before you place any orders or share your credit card information or anything like that with these people.
Mm-hmm.
So thanks for the warning, David.
Yep, and that'll do it for our community feedback segment. If you would like to contribute, we would love to have you do so. And I want to put a challenge out there, Sally. We haven't had a voicemail in a long time, and I really would love to increase the volume of those of that particular way of communicating with us, and we'd be happy to play those on the show. So pull out your cell phone and you simply dial 405-4WELLS. That's 405-367-9357. Very easy to remember. So before this show's even over, pull that phone out. Send us a voicemail. We would love to hear your thoughts on the show. Maybe something that struck you. Maybe a topic that you want us to address. Love to hear from you. So there are many other ways to contact us, but the contact method of choice for next week, we would love to hear voicemail.
And you can even add us to your cell phone frequent caller list if you want, and call us when you have those breaking tech news that you need to share with us.
That's right. So next week, Sally, we return to our focus on office administration, and I'm looking forward to this one because we get to we're going to dip into my getting things done bag of tricks, and I'm going to pull out some things that will make the office a little bit more productive, both on a personal and on a group level. There's all kinds of things that we can do to make our offices a little bit more efficient, and some of the techniques that I've taught in GTD or getting things done, I think have some application within the church office.
Looking forward to that. Also looking forward to talking with Staff Minister John Rudot.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he's a GDD
fan. He is.
He
was in one of my Winterim classes. So.
And he's making use of those kind of techniques in his church office up in Appleton, Wisconsin. So we'll have a great interview to share with our listeners as well.
Looking forward to it. Thanks very much, everybody, for joining us. We love having this weekly conversation with you, so please do join the conversation. Let's close the show with the music of Kevin Lersch. We'll continue our Advent-themed music. One of my favorite songs, Mary, Did You Know, from his album, Oh Holy Night. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We'll talk to you next week.
Mary, did you know that your baby would someday walk on water? Mary, did you know that your baby boy would save our sons and daughters? Did you know that your baby boy has come to make you new? This child that you soon deliver you. Mary, did you know that your baby boy would give sight to a blind man? Mary, did you know that your baby boy will calm a storm with his hand? Did you know that your baby boy has walked where angels trod? When you kissed your little baby, then you kissed the face of God. Sleeping. the grace.